Chase and Michelle, hour number two, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezevic here with you. We'll have Jonathan Hutton join us at the bottom of the hour from Outkick 360 and talk about Rand Carthon and the Titans. Also, I will actually be hosting afternoons today in for Jared with Bob Shoup, the coach, coming in for all 4 hours. So looking forward to that starting at 2 o'clock here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Pulling double duty. But talking about the Titans and just how far off they are from being a competitive team in the AFC once again. And I was actually texting with Jared last night, and he pointed this out. He's like, did you think about that the two teams in the AFC championship game, the top two teams in the AFC, Bengals and Chiefs, the Titans lost to the Chiefs by 3 points with Malik Willis at quarterback in Kansas City. It went to overtime, and they lost to the Bengals by 4 points here with Tannehill. And I was like, you know what? That's a good point.
Yeah.
Didn't even think about that.
I mean,
and so with all the problems that they have,
yeah,
no offensive line, the receiver core is thin, you know, all those things, they still hung tough with the top two teams in the AFC. So is it really as simple as fixing the offensive line and some of these issues that we've talked about to get them over that hump?
Well, I mean, if you look at when they played close games with those two, that was when the defense was fully healthy at the beginning of the season. And that's what I've been trying to remind fans about, is that you were able to play really, really close games with this bad offensive line. Right. And what did we notice? One of the not even talking about any of the like outside factors of the firing of the GM and the DUI, not even talking about any of that. The biggest drop off was this defense and their injuries. We saw them. They lose the first two games and then they go on a win streak. Right. And then they go on a losing streak to end the year. Their defense, what their defense had been doing, they were averaging 3 sacks a game, an interception. So that's why when we take a look at this team and we look at, okay, what needs to be changed and where this team was competing with some of the other top dogs in the AFC, they could have beat the Chiefs with Malik Willis at quarterback. They could have beat the Bengals here. So you are really not that far off. You were the one seed 1 year ago. This team doesn't need to be blown up, right? You add a couple different pieces. You add, you know, you try to fix your O-line, you're not going to be able to fix the entire thing in one offseason, but I don't think just because you can't fix the entire offensive line means that they're not going to be competitive next year. Like they, like Jared told you when you guys were texting, like they got blown out by Buffalo the second week of the year. I mean, then they went on a win streak and were able to hang with pretty much everybody except for the Eagles midway through the season. But that's why I think that 7-game losing streak just put people in a very negative, downer mode. And, you know, losing to the Jags, who traditionally haven't been a good franchise. But, I mean, look what they did. They made it to the second round of the playoffs. They beat the Chargers. So, or losing, you know, to the Texans or being able to lock up the division earlier in the year. And they just got so down on this team. But if you take a step back and you look at it with a wide lens – on the defense that you're going to be having coming back, if you could, you know, make a couple moves at offensive line, right? We've talked about them. Andre Dillard from the Eagles, he actually stepped in the other night when one of their linemen got hurt, played pretty well out there. Like, you are not that far off. And I think that's the message that, you know, fans can't forget.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I think that that's why you figure out, and you got to figure out contracts. I mean, that's going to be the big thing with Tannehill and even Henry. But you do that, and I think that's a conversation you have with Ryan. And go, hey, man, to make this work with you, and we want this to work with you, we need you to help us out here. And then you go and figure, you know, we figure out that you can do that and then get the offensive line. You know, you have to make the offensive line better. That's got to be priority number one. and get some protection there, and then go from there, and you'll see. Do I think that they're going to do all that this offseason and then be in the AFC Championship next year? No, probably not.
Did I think they would be the one seed 2 years ago? No.
No, probably not.
And, I mean, you look at that offensive line. Taylor Lewan was playing not fully healthy, right? I know you had Ben Jones, who was younger. You had Nate Davis, and you had Roger Saffold and Quisenberry here and there. But, I mean, it's really easy to get caught up in what have I seen lately? What have I seen from this team lately? And that is a lot of losing, which these last couple of years, Tennessee Titans fans haven't been used to. But if you go back prior to John Robinson, there was way more losing than they've seen in the last couple of years. So
right.
you can't forget, you know, all of the strides that this organization and team has made in the last 3 years, starting with getting Ryan Tannehill, right? And hitting on drafts with Jeffrey Simmons and Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown. So, you know, you've got to draft this year. You have to draft well this year. And I know it's hard because you got a new general manager coming in. But from what we've seen, you know, he's been able to spot out talent. And one of the big questions I know from people will be, okay, do you stick with the core? We've heard the sound bites from Ryan Carthon on Ryan Tannehill versus the sound bites on Derrick Henry. I mean, Robbie this morning brought up the suggestion, like, if you think that your guy – if you think that your guy at quarterback is in this year's draft because you're in the AFC and the quarterbacks in the AFC are Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, and they're not going away anywhere, and you're going to have to be competing against those quarterbacks to make it to a Super Bowl, Trevor Lawrence and whoever the Colts get, right? Those are the guys that you're going to have to be competing against to get to the Super Bowl. If you look at the NFC, the quarterbacks aren't to the level of the AFC quarterbacks.
Right.
So you can't not evaluate the quarterback class every single year, because if you don't have your guy, you should be looking for him every single year, because maybe you get a Patrick Mahomes or a Joe Burrow, and yeah, I know they're generational, but you should always be looking to upgrade at that position, because Rand Carthon said in his press conference, this is a quarterback-driven league, and guys are hired and fired every day at that position.
Yeah, and, you know, on the offensive line part, I mean, look, Cincinnati turned it around in a year. So
Trevor Lawrence, and I was looking at a video of him, Joe Burrow, he's 4, well, this was before last game, but 4-1 in playoff games, 23 sacks.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, you know, he had a really bleep offensive line.
Yeah.
And was able to do it. And I'm not saying that that's what you want, because you got
Ryan Tannehill.
But Joe
Burrow is also elite.
Well, so that was my point. If you have Ryan Tannehill back there, you need a better offensive line. You don't have to fix the whole thing in 1 year. If you could make maybe a couple adjustments, as I tongue-in-cheek that, I'm like...
I mean, honestly...
What would you rather have? Okay, so offensive line. Say you got Ben Jones, Nate Davis, Nicholas Petit-Frere, and then... you get Andre Dillard, and then that left tackle position still has a question mark, but you get an elite wide receiver.
That's a good question. Who is the elite wide receiver? I mean, are we trading for Justin Jefferson here?
Yeah, or? say that that level of wide receiver, that level of playmaker, a Diggs, a Justin Jefferson, a Jamar Chase, right? I know all those guys
still,
are locked in.
I still think you have to have the O-line fixed. I mean, they need to rebuild the whole left side. I've decided don't bring Lewan back. So rebuild the whole left side.
Well, that was still a very if.
Yeah, and I don't think Ben Jones is back. So I mean, I think you're replacing. Now you might move Aaron Brewer to center. That's probably
yes,
what you're going to do.
Yes, he was the guy I was forgetting.
You're probably going to move him to center and then get a left tackle and a left guard.
And then you need to be drafting at that position,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
you need to have major depth.
Yeah, and I agree on Dillard. You know, you could bring him in, but
and that's an if you get him, right? I'm sure
yeah.
a lot of other teams are looking to beef up their offensive lines, right? And even just to have a guy like him who can come in as a second string but play for you and be serviceable, which is what he did the other night in the Eagles-Giants game.
615-737-1025. That's our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, we will dive into the offensive coordinator and what Mike Vrabel is looking for at that position. We'll do that next. It's Chase and Michelle. We're presented by Hair Club. Love your hair, live your life, creating custom hair loss solutions for men and women here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Mike, on filling the spots on your staff, offensive coordinator, have you talked to some guys yet? And how's that process coming?
I would say the process is going well. I'm excited with the numerous people that we've been able to meet and interview. That's been the bulk of my time has been doing that since the season ended. And, excited where it's at, excited the ideas, and nothing really new to report. But we've had, there's some spots that we have to fill.
It's Mike Vrabel on the offensive coordinator, what he's looking for in that position. Chase Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Reporter Nick Kieser here with you on this Monday. So what do we think he is looking for? And he was asked that question a couple of different ways during the press conference of, is he willing to, the type of guy that he's looking for specifically. And then this one on if he's willing to change the offensive scheme.
Like, how open are you to changing the offensive scheme?
Well, I think we change things every year. And I want coaches and people, and we had this conversation this morning, of that are versatile, that have multiplicity, that can adjust, that aren't just married to one specific way of looking at a player, of coaching a scheme, coaching a technique. There's a bunch of different ways to rush the passer. It's a bunch of different ways to block or to run a route. Outside zone, inside zone. The whole idea is to have people that, can function and excel in doing different things. And I want to do that offensively. I absolutely do. I want to do whatever's best for our football players, and they can excel. The young players that we saw this year, finding ways to help them make a jump, and then the veteran players that we'll have back.
So that's a very Mike Vrabel type answer to give.
You're not wrong.
But it does. I mean, they've interviewed Tim Kelly officially for the job. I don't know. I think it's probably going to be Tim Kelly, if I had to guess. But I would love if it's not. I would love if it is Matt Nagy or Eric Bieniemy, someone with a different, different mindset, different scheme, one that can adapt to the players that you have here. But I do think it's time to kind of change it up. And I'm sure Tim Kelly could bring some new ideas too. So, I mean, wouldn't be the end of the world. But I think that it needs to be that multiplicity is a word he likes to use. You need to find that but what I do think is it's going to be similar to maybe what they've run, because I think the blueprint is going to be what the 49ers are doing.
Well, and I think a lot of people are seeing these names, Matt Nagy, Eric Bieniemy, and they're thinking of the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's also remember, they have Patrick Mahomes at the quarterback position. So even if the Tennessee Titans decide to hire one of those guys, that doesn't mean the offense is going to be like that, right? The ideas, some concepts will be similar, but I think a lot of people are getting, maybe lost in the fact of, how electric that offense looks. But you have to remember that they have Patrick Mahomes, okay? So, yeah, new ideas coming here, maybe changing some things, adapting, like Vrabel said, to different players each year. I mean, Vrabel was not shy to, I think it was Albert Breer or somebody he told earlier this year, who are we going to throw it to? Of course we're running Derrick Henry, because what receivers are we going to throw it to, right? So there's still going to be a run-focused team. I think Tim Kelly is, the leader in the doghouse right now. Actually, a report from Tom Pelissero this morning, the Chargers are going to interview Titans tight end coach Luke Skip. I can never say his last name. Steckel?
Steckel.
Steckel. Steckel. There we go. Yeah. For their OC job this week. So, you know, that's interesting. That could he be a candidate for the Titans OC job that we haven't heard about?
The last two were the Titans coach.
So, you know what I mean? Like, he's getting interviews for other offensive coordinator jobs. So, I mean, maybe he is an in-house candidate for the Tennessee Titans. I don't know. Right? We've heard Nagy. We've heard Eric Bieniemy thrown around. But the difference in, you know, general manager and offensive coordinator is, you know, the general manager will know who all got interviewed, right? The organization had to send that information out and let us know everybody who they interviewed for the general manager position, whereas for the offensive coordinator, they don't have to tell who they're interviewing, right? Some of it will get out because of agents. They'll want their client's name to get mm-hmm. out, and they'll want somebody to report that the Tennessee Titans are interviewing, say, person for the offensive coordinator job. But we're not going to find out who all they interviewed. And for all we know right now, the Titans haven't heard back from Matt Nagy or Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
And they're obviously still trying to make a Super Bowl run right now.
I think that's an interesting one. So Luke Steckel's been here. He's 37. Yeah, his dad, Les, was the longtime offensive coordinator for the Titans. That's who Derek played for earlier in his career mm-hmm. With the Titans. So there's obviously a pedigree there. Knows a lot of people. Grew up in the organization. But
I mean, he survived coaching turnover here, which is rare sometimes.
Yeah, he's like Arthur. He's like Arthur Smith. He's done a lot of different jobs, which mm-hmm. I think is cool, you know, within the organization. So I wouldn't rule out them talking to him, but I kind of figured it would have come up by now, which makes me think even more it could be Tim Kelly. But, you know, I thought they might end up going outside, and they still could. I think maybe Vrabel doesn't know 100% yet what he wants to do.
Well, and I think also, too, a lot of focus was on, okay, the Super Bowl's almost here, which means the draft's around the corner, and we need to name who our GM is going to be. So that obviously was the number one priority in getting your general manager. And I think now probably he can spend – I mean, I'm sure he had an idea, and they've talked to people and things like that. But now it's probably like, okay, now the urgency in hiring an offensive coordinator can be sped up a little bit. Also, let's not forget to mention Chris Harris is hired as the – defensive backs coach coming from the Commanders. So they did fill that position. They filled their GM position, and they still need to fill their offensive coordinator. And then whoever that is will probably bring in their own offensive yep. line coach. So those are the positions on offense. Well, and as a whole,
I like the Harris hire.
Yeah, no, I do too. And the report was a little bit confusing because they said is still open for defensive coordinator positions. But what was meant by that, and Joe said he talked to a source and explained it this morning, was, you know, if a club wanted to say, hey, we want to interview you for our DC job, he would be able to interview for that because it is that step up.
Yeah.
But I don't even think – I'm not sure which places have DC openings right now.
Yeah, and they'll – I think Minnesota fired theirs. There's a few.
Not as many as OCs.
Yeah, but they'll announce all that at one time. You know, when they get it done. I would think by the end of this week they should have the OC. I would hope. Unless they've talked to Nagy and Bieniemy, and we don't know that they've talked to Nagy and Bieniemy, which I think could very well be true.
And they're saying, hey, let's hold off.
So, I mean, you don't have to have it done this week, but I think you'd like to have it done before the Super Bowl.
Which could very well be the case because the 49ers DC, who his name's escaping me right now, but he had head coaching.
DeNico Ryans?
Yeah. He had head coaching interview opportunities with the Cardinals and the Colts, and he said, you know what, I'm not going to deal with these until after the game.
DeNico Ryans is going to be a head coach.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, like, that's what he said, so it could be a similar situation.
Absolutely, 100%.
And of course, like, your number one goal right now is you want to go win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying that, like, I have no doubt he's going to be head coach. I think if teams like the Cardinals and the Colts, if they've identified him as their guy, they'll wait. They will be like, hey.
And if that's your guy, you do wait.
You go win your Super Bowl, and then you come win one here. Like, we're cool. But
but also come win one with us as well.
Yeah. But I think you wait. I mean, I think that's a guy you wait on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's definitely a rising star and
will be a former player.
Head coach if it's not this year. Very soon.
There's a lot of things these days that make me feel old, including working with you two every day. But You know, when I see guys like DeNico Ryans that I remember as a player, or I see Asante Samuel Jr. when I remember his dad playing, like, I just like, damn. We're at this point. I'm old.
Listen, you're only 35.
I know. Maybe Hutton can relate to me on this. Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, is going to join us next. We'll talk about the Titans and everything with him. That's all next. Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, the game. Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063, the game, presented by Hair Club. Love your hair, live your life, creating custom hair loss solutions for men and women. We say hello now to the great Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360. You can hear that weekdays from 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan. Hut, what's up, my man? How we doing?
Good morning, guys. Hope all is well on this start to the week.
You know, it's not bad. We saw some good football this weekend. Unfortunately, my Cowboys couldn't get it done, but that's okay because the team that I believe the Tennessee Titans are going to model themselves after are going to the NFC Championship once again. So maybe that's a sign of things to come.
But how do we think that Rand Carthon was watching the game last night?
Didn't he say in the press conference he was going to go?
I think he went.
Yeah, I mean, I think
he might did he really? There.
Yeah,
I think he might have flown back to San Fran for it. Which, I mean, I get you want to see it through. Like, I mean, he's going to get a ring if they win.
He can have it right on his desk. Because motivation.
I totally missed that. I envision him like sitting over at St. Thomas Sports Park, like feet propped up, watching all the work that he did while he's looking at all the work he has to do here.
Well, it is funny because you look at his career, that's kind of how it's been. Like, he's been a part of the building process and then doesn't get to see, like, he was with the Falcons and then left right before they went, and then he was with the Rams, and now the 49ers. But, you know, ultimately he wanted to be a general manager. I was very impressed with him on Friday. I didn't think I wouldn't be, you know, and the people that I've talked to, we've had Jeff Fisher on, who knew him from the Rams. I've heard, you know, clips of Thomas Dimitroff talking about him. I felt like he was going to win the press conference, which was all well and good. But collaboration was certainly the word of the day that was used by Amy Adams-Strunk, by Rand Carthon, by Mike Vrabel. But my takeaway, Jonathan, was I still think if it comes down to somebody's got to have final say, it's going to be Mike Vrabel. What do you think?
I think it just depends on what they're after. I got the same vibe. Look, the common sense aspect of it, whenever you have a general manager and a head coach they're locked up contractually together, meaning that they expire at the same time, which was J-Rob and Vrabel. If one goes and one stays, the guy who stays normally ends up with a bit more say and control over what's about to happen. And the new general manager doesn't have the executive vice president title, which was overseeing Vrabel. So that alone gives Vrabel more status within what's going on. And we know that Vrabel's not going to remain quiet in a closed door meeting over what he believes he needs or wants. And I think from Rand Carthon's own press conference, he said his job was to give Vrabel exactly what he needs. Now, when it comes to personnel, Carthon's in charge of that. He's in charge of personnel. But I think if Vrabel's adamant about one specific player or adamant that he doesn't want one specific player, I don't think Rand Carthon's going to go run out and go draft that player because Vrabel doesn't want him. I think the collaboration word that was tossed around so often comes down to exactly that, what they're looking for, what they're not, and making sure that everyone on the staff can describe the same type of player.
Yeah, I think that is a fair point. And we'll see. I like what I saw from both of them. Vrabel seemed very happy with things. So that's certainly a sign of things to come. Do you agree, though, that the 49ers should be the model that, you know, we don't know what Brock Purdy is going to be or Trey Lance or Jimmy G, or we know Jimmy G, what he is to this point, but don't have that elite quarterback, but you have a really, really good to great roster around him, a stifling defense, a dynamic run game, dynamic receivers, a fantastic offensive line. Do you think that's the model for what Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel are going to need to build here?
Yes, but even before Shanahan got there, I mean, they've now been to the NFC Championship game 3 of the last 4 years, but really 6 of the last 12. So, I mean, they're a consistent force in their conference. So you can look at the quarterback position. That's the quickest way and the quickest path is you got to get that right. But then you have to build pieces around what you have. The Titans were on path to doing that and then fell off a cliff, starting with the COVID season, with their draft and with some of their free agent acquisitions. And that just mounts, you know, that snowballs into what it became, which was a roster that was depleted with depth and their top paid players weren't producing like it for the most part. On the opposite side of things, the 49ers decided to pay Deebo Samuel. You know, they trade for Christian McCaffrey. They end up backdooring their way into Jimmy Garoppolo when Trey Lance gets hurt. Jimmy G was supposed to be traded somewhere else, but his injury kept him there. And then Brock Purdy is a guy that they find in the, you know, but we all know the story, Mr. Irrelevant, certainly not irrelevant anymore. And I think it's going to change the way that owners should look around to their scouting departments, to their staffs, to their general managers and say, you know, look at what's going on in San Francisco. And meanwhile, we've got this third or fourth round pick that looks like he's never taken a snap before. And you know, you're saying we don't have time to develop him because the practice doesn't give us ample opportunity. But then you have Kyle Shanahan who's throwing on a second and two or third and two yesterday with Brock Purdy picking up 7 yards and a first down in the NFC divisional playoff round. I mean, there are signs that point to knowing exactly what you're doing, who you're going after, who fits your model, who doesn't. San Francisco is a great example of exactly that. They're losing a lot of talent, though, in their front office and in their scouting department recently. And I can tell you that they didn't want to lose Rand Carthon, but at the same time, they are now the front office model of what the Rams were for coaching. And I think the Titans aren't the only team, Chase, that are certainly trying to copy what the 49ers are doing. I think the Titans are the closest thing to San Francisco's overall structure in mentality, not player-wise, but coaching-wise, where what they want to do is be versatile on offense, but on defense, they're going to beat you through defense and special teams are not going to beat you. Meanwhile, on offense, they can beat you in several different ways.
We've got Jonathan Hutton on with us of Outkick 360. Jonathan, you talked about, you know, the 49ers loss with Rand Carthon coming here in their front office. When he spoke on Friday, he was asked specifically about Ryan Tannehill, very noncommittal in his answer, but then spoke about Derrick Henry, you know, saying, I can't wait to size him up and different things like that. After hearing both of those comments, did that make you think differently on whether, you know, he's going to decide to stay with Henry and maybe try to feel out his options at the quarterback position? What did you think by those two comments made by Rand Carthon?
Well, when it comes to Tannehill, I think they've got to decide as a staff what they're going to do. You know, we've been asking the question, reload or rebuild, right? Well, I think if you bring back Tannehill, you can reload around him. And if you go the rookie route, it's a rebuild mentality, even though they won't admit that. Now, it doesn't mean you have to go the rookie route without Ryan Tannehill. I think the quarterback decision, though, has a lot to do with what they want to do at offensive coordinator. And I think regardless of offensive coordinator, they have to run the football and build through their offensive line because that's still how you can go about winning football games next season. Run the football, play sound defense. I mean, look at the teams that won this past weekend. That doesn't mean that you can't have great or don't need great quarterback play. They do. But to me, Ryan Tannehill is pretty far down the list on the list of issues this team has. I think that's Carthon not trying to pin himself against in the corner and say, this is the direction we're going, because there's no way he knows this roster in and out the way he does the previous team that he has been working for. I think that's got to be the toughest part for him, is figuring out who's going, who's staying, how much money is allocated in the salary cap, what it's going to allow him to do in the immediate future prior to the start of the new league year. And that comes down to Jeffrey Simmons, Ryan Tannehill, and Derrick Henry for the most part. There's some other guys that will factor in there too, some other vets. But for the most part, those are the big three that they've got to figure out the direction of. And I think all three are going to end up with different contract structures, starting with Simmons, but especially with Tannehill and Henry. I think both guys would have to have different contract structures going into next year if, in fact, you're going to go down that path again and then reload on the offensive line. So I didn't read much into what he said about Tannehill. And, you know, the Henry stuff, that fits the mentality of what they're going to do. He still mentioned running the football. So did Vrabel. That's just kind of the mindset of those two guys. And to me, I think if you got in a closed door with them and asked them their options, Tannehill right now, as we sit here today, Tannehill's the best option. Now, other options can present themselves. You know, what are your trade options in the draft? What are your free agent options? What are your trade options right now among quarterbacks? But right now, Tannehill's the most realistic and best option given the circumstances of what they have.
They both mentioned, you know, running the football and sticking with this offense, but still don't have an offensive coordinator, Hutton. Who do you think would be the best option or your lead candidate for this offensive coordinator position? And especially because there are 10 other offensive coordinator positions in the NFL right now.
Yeah, and it's an intriguing question because this one to me is Vrabel. Vrabel's leading it. Mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of people in the building have a good sense of what's going on in terms of the interview process because it's not the opposite, but it's not as similar as a general manager interview process where you see the guy walking around the building. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, look, Eric Bieniemy is in a interesting spot because he continues to attempt to try to get these head coaching opportunities. He's interviewed for 3 or 4 years straight now in the off season to no avail. And it comes down to, does he want to stay in KC or does he want to try something else and try to work his way up the way that Matt LaFleur did, for instance, by going from McVay to another franchise? Does he need to get out from underneath Andy Reid? Not saying he needs to, but some coaches will view it that way. And I think Matt Nagy is there. The thought was if Bieniemy last year got a head coaching job, Matt Nagy was going to step into the Bieniemy role and then vice versa. So I think the Titans have asked for both guys. Assuming that one guy is potentially out looking for another opportunity and the other guy is taking that guy's role. Again, that's just my perception of it. I wouldn't mind seeing that as my top option, having Bieniemy, because I think there is a great opportunity here, Michelle, to change up not your philosophy, but change up how you go about running the style of offense you want to run. You can still run the football, but be much more versatile, much more creative, less predictable in how you go about calling plays and when you call certain plays. And any OC that comes in, it's going to be a much different dynamic than the place that they're leaving. But you mentioned all the openings. There could be several more once all these other coaches are actually hired across the league, and then we see some staff turnover as well. Tim Kelly, to me, has a great chance of being the guy because he was handpicked last offseason to come in and be the passing game coordinator, whatever that meant. And then behind the scenes, even when they hired Todd Downing, they asked for permission to interview Tim Kelly, and they were denied. They were blocked by Houston. Well, then he becomes available, comes here. The thought is like, and this is no knock on Tim Kelly, it just feels like that's the baseline floor. They're going to end up with Tim Kelly. That's no knock. I think Tim Kelly can be a huge upgrade over what we've seen the last 2 years. But I think the philosophy doesn't change. From LaFleur to Arthur Smith to Todd Downing, Vrabel has been the same with, we need to run the football well. We need to start with the offensive line. We want to be physical at the point of attack. You can do all those things and still look like Cincinnati did yesterday. Cincinnati mauled Buffalo up front. They ran the football very well, and they threw the football over the yard. I mean, that was more of a 2020 version of what Arthur Smith was doing, but it still felt like the Vrabel mantra. They need to get back to that. They need to stack plays and have defensive coordinators chase. And the Titans haven't had that guy for the last 2 years.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how it turns out for sure. I think we're close to maybe knowing who the OC is.
Yes, I agree. Yep. You got to get that's the next step.
You got to get that done before the Super Bowl, I think. You know, it'd be ideal if it's this week, unless it's a guy that's, you know, still playing. But we'll see for sure. Hutt, thanks as always. We'll be listening 2 to 5 today on 94.9 The Fan.
Thanks, Hutton.
Yes, thank you, guys. I'll be tuned in for the rest of the show. Appreciate you.
Awesome. That is Jonathan Hutton. Outkick 360 joins us every Monday at 10:30. You can also hear him on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace Wednesdays at noon as well. Preds fans, don't miss this Wednesday night Smashville Live at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs starting at 6 o'clock. You can see Predators star players up close and personal, plus get autographs and pictures. It'll be Nino Niederreiter and Ryan McDonough joining us this week. Smashville Live is presented by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Little Harpeth Beer, and Superbook Sports on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
What you've seen of this team and the identity of the Titans the last few years, what jumps out? And do you feel like that your preference and what you're going to bring is going to fit that existing identity?
What jumps out is how hard and how tough this team is, how hard they play. And I think the team has been made in the image of our head coach. You know, Mike is a tough guy. He works hard. I just almost said something else, and I saw my kids sitting there. I think the team is built in his image and what Mike believes in. And like I said before, you know, our core foundation of football comes from the same tree, and I believe in those.
Titans general manager Rand Carthon on what he likes about the Titans. Collaboration coming up again. The head coach coming up again. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace coming up in about 10 minutes. But this goes to my theme. Look, he's saying all the right things, wants to build this in the image of the head coach. He said, you know, when asked about his first priority, the head coach is the first priority to figure out how he ticks and the players he want around him. Mike Vrabel was in a great mood. It goes back to my thought that this is a move for Vrabel. Not saying he did it, but it's a move for him. And ultimately, it might be the one that works and helps this team win a championship. Time will tell. But can this collaboration work? I always felt that from what we saw, and we weren't there every day, the collaboration between John Robinson and Mike Vrabel did work. And ultimately, it was viewed as the moves that John Robinson made got him fired. Now things are going to be more of a 1A, 1B kind of setup. But can it actually work? But, you know, the theme today is I feel good about what's coming.
Yeah, and I mean, see it now. We can take everything from his press conference, and, you know, he seems just like a really good guy, and that's what we got from him, whether it was coming into the media room before the press conference or just with some of his answers. He seemed very confident in himself, and, you know, judging him from that, it seems like he'll be awesome, right? Seems like a great guy, a great fit, but, you know, when you become a GM of an NFL team, you're judged by a lot of the decisions you make and the draft picks you choose. And we haven't seen any of that yet. So, you know, we're in the honeymoon phase right now, of course, because he hasn't made any of those big decisions yet. And, you know, the thing about the whole collaboration is you'll know if it works and you'll know if it doesn't. Because if it works, you won't hear anything else about who has final say or, you know, asking questions about that or making comments on trades or draft picks. And if it doesn't work, there probably will be chatter of, you know, they didn't agree on this. It'll get out somehow because, you know.
And look, there was a little bit of that
towards
after
the end
after John got fired that, you know, I talking to people, you kind of heard that they were disagreeing on some things.
Well, and that's the thing. You don't hear anything whenever, like, think about how long J-Rob and Vrabel worked together. And it never really, everybody knew that J-Rob was Vrabel's boss, but it never was asked or talked about, you know, well, who picked this player and who picked that player? But the bad decisions were put on J-Rob because we knew that he had final say because he was here before Mike Vrabel got here. Whereas now we can assume that it's Mike Vrabel who has final say. And some of these decisions will be put a little bit more on him and will reflect him because of that.
Mike Vrabel was asked, too, why he thought the collaboration between the two would work.
From your perspective, what is it about Rand that's going to make this collaboration work?
Well, I just believe in his history. I believe in where he's been, in his pedigree, and what he believes about making relationships. It's coach's job is to teach, develop, and inspire through making a connection with the player. And that can't change, whether it's where we bring him in or making connections with his staff or my staff. It's different. It's different than where it was 20 years ago when he played or when I played. It just is. Paul, I know it's January and you're still going to interrupt me, but I'm just trying to answer the question that we have to be able to get to know these guys and what they go through and the people in our building. And when you stop and you ask how somebody's doing, you have to be willing to stand there and listen to them instead of just walking by. And that starts with me and remembering that, not just walking by and say, hey, how you doing today? It's like, no, if you're going to willing to ask the question, stop, stand there and figure out how you can help somebody.
That's Mike Vrabel on that collaboration. I think that's a really good point.
I think that's a point everybody needs to live by.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to ask, you stand there for the answer. Don't just ask it just to ask it. I try and work that way. Like, if I ask you how you're doing, I legitimately want to know. It's not just how's everything going? I walk in here every morning when you're doing the morning show, like, what's up, Michelle? How we doing?
You can tell when I'm chatty, I'm in a good mood, or you can tell when I'm
quiet. I've learned how to read you.
She got up on the wrong side of the bed this morning.
No, my initial thought is like, hey, how can I help? What's up? And that's what you have to do in leadership. That's going to do it for us today, but stick around. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, they are coming up next. They'll continue this discussion on Rand Carthon and look at the championship matchups as well. That's all coming up next here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.